Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL as we are officially into the preseason. We will discuss the WNBA. We have our best for last, little college football talk. As always, we are weeks away from the college football season. 3 weeks away from LSU's home opener from all my Tiger fans. But, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And, as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports for all of Just In Time Sports social medias, Facebook, X, Instagram, and more, Threads as well. Again, you can follow, give us a like, give us a subscribe, guys. It really helps us out. But don't forget to do that. But, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake. He can never show you fake.
If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome into the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. I am excited to be back, guys. It's been a minute since we did our last show. Job's kind of crazy right now. You guys know I coach football. So we're trying to get everything set up for the new season. And it's just been a lot right now. Kind of coming out at one time. But today, had an off day. First time in a couple of weeks. So I made sure I wanted to get an episode out to you guys. Very conveniently, or very lucky for me, it coincided with the debut of Shedeur Sanders. But before we get into that, make sure that you guys hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening to this show. Definitely make sure you rate us. Again, that helps big us. That helps us big time when you guys subscribe and rate and all that stuff. So absolutely huge. Make sure you hit that download button as well. And then share with your friends. I know I always say like, rate, subscribe, and share, but like, make sure that you guys are doing that. If you have not done so already, it is huge. Like I said, it helps us out tremendously whenever you guys do that. So let's get into it. So last night was the debut of Cleveland Browns rookie phenom quarterback Shedeur Sanders. Now, I call him a phenom. Some may scoff at me, whatever. He was the most popular player in college football the last two seasons for sure. He, along with his father, Deion, along with his brother in arms, Travis Hunter, revitalized to a national stage the Colorado football program. What they did for Jackson State and HBCUs with the time of Jackson State was incredible. If you disagree, you're just a hater at this point. Like, as far as his impact on college football, what he did for the HBCU scene was huge. The Celebration Bowl was around 2, 3, 4 years before, or more, even more years before Jackson State played in those back-to-back. They lost them both, but played in those back-to-back Celebration Bowls. They were easily the highest rated and highest attended when Jackson State was there, with the ratings through the roof. I mean, they played multiple games on ESPN platforms during the time Deion and Travis and Shedeur was there. Moved to Colorado. We know what happens there. Travis with a Heisman. Shedeur brings home some weapons. Both jerseys are retired, etc. Right? So he comes in with all this fanfare, and we go through his pre-draft process. Now, many people wondered if he got past Pittsburgh in round one, how far would he fall? And we kind of discussed it, not discussed it then, but I kind of reiterate it now. The advantage to picking a quarterback is the first round. The reason why is you get that fifth year of team control. Now, if he hits, he's probably never seen that fifth year anyway, but it gives you 5 full years with team control, very controlled money, to evaluate your quarterback. Like, if he comes in at 22, you technically don't have to pay him until he's 27, right? Now, if he hits, you're paying about the year three, you're trying to get in front of the market, etc. But if he's a guy that you're like, hey, he's solid, but he's not, you know, top of the market good, let's play this thing out. It could be he's 27 years old before he finally gets his money, right? So that's always on the table for first-round pick quarterbacks. After that, NFL GMs sort of see the pick of need over position. So first-round pick, you'll overdraft, quote-unquote, a quarterback in the first round because he's a quarterback. That fifth year weighs that heavily. After that, he's another player. So a quarterback can't help you. Like Shedeur Sanders, for instance, when you use him, we're talking about him, he's never playing special teams for the Browns or anybody. He's not playing receiver. He's not running a gunner. He's not long snapping. He's doing nothing for the Cleveland Browns besides playing quarterback or any other pro team, right? Like he's not doing anything else besides that before that team besides playing quarterback. He's only ever played quarterback. He's a quarterback. That's who he is, right? Well, when he got past Pittsburgh in the first round, he fell like a missile. Now, when the Giants traded up, ultimately to go get Jackson Dart, many people thought that was the pick. That he was going to end up, when Giants flew back in the first round, people thought, okay, he's going to the Giants. He fell a few picks past, people thought he might have fallen, but he goes in the first round anyway. He doesn't, right? He ends up falling to day three, fifth round, of course, Cleveland Brown picks him. Now, as soon as the pick happens, you start hearing discourse of, well, this is an Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski pick, meaning the GM and the head coach, or was it a Jimmy Haslam, who's the owner pick? It was widely considered this is a Jimmy Haslam pick. Correctly assumed, if it is Jimmy Haslam, who's in the business of not only winning, but primarily making money, the Shedeur Sanders jersey flew. I mean, it sold out as soon as it was available. I mean, it was pre-order sold out. Like, I've never heard of that in my life. It was pre-order sold out. I mean, it flew off the racks. Even last night during the game on the road, you saw a lot of white and brown and orange number 12s in the crowd, which is Shedeur Sanders' number. Ironically, it's also Travis Hunter's number. But he said he picked it for Brady, but Travis Hunter wearing 12, but that's neither here nor there. Right? And so Shedeur comes to the game, and a lot of people were saying, okay, there's a lot to lose here. There's a lot to gain here. But what this kind of feels like is a setup. It kind of feels like Cleveland is almost doing the here. Golly. I mean, you want him so bad. Let's go. Let's see it, right? He's been the fourth string quarterback on their depth chart the entire camp. Behind Joe Flacco, behind Kenny Pickett, who I don't understand, and behind Dylan Gabriel, who's in his same draft class, right? He's been the fourth string quarterback. He has not moved. He's gone days without getting any reps in team at all. He's never had first team reps. From what I can tell, he's never had second team reps. He's always had third team reps at quarterback. Then you toss him in a situation. Carolina starting their starters. You really aren't starting your starters, second and third stringers. He really hadn't practiced, and there's no other quarterback there besides Snoop Huntley. So he's going to play. You know, not a situation where it's like, okay, he's going to play two series and come out, and then Dylan Gabriel's going to play a couple series and come out, and then Kenny Pickett might see one. Like, Joe Flacco's 40. He's not playing. Kenny Pickett has a hamstring. Dylan Gabriel has a hamstring. So that leaves Shedeur Sanders and recently signed within the last week or so, Tyler Huntley. Former Pro Bowler, Snoop Huntley, but Tyler Huntley nonetheless. Ultimately, Shedeur goes out there, and I said, I listened to Nick Wright's podcast, and I thought of this thought, but the thought was, what would be a good day for Shedeur Sanders? If Shedeur Sanders finished with this stat line, what would be considered a great day? Like, if you never saw the game, let's say, what did Shedeur do tonight? What would be the stat line where you said, okay, he had a great night? Like, what is that number? Like, what do that numbers look like, right? And so I was thinking about it on my way to work, kind of racking my brain about it. And I said, okay, I came up with a number. I said 20 of 27, about 200 yards, couple of touchdowns. No, I didn't say couple. I said one touchdown, no turnovers. I said if he did that and, you know, was sacked maybe once, if he did that, I would consider that a great night. Again, he's rarely played with these guys. He's against Carolina starters, at least for a little while. If he goes 20 or 27, you know, a little, like, you know, that's high level. I mean, that's a high number, but I think a bunch of short throws. 20 or 27, couple hundred yards, one touchdown, no turnovers, zero or one sacks. I would consider that great night, right? But I was like, if I didn't watch the game. So I turned the game on. I didn't even know his numbers. He started off, and I watched every throw after the first drive. So he starts off a little rough. And I'm like, okay, not great, right? And you can almost kind of feel it. Like if he has a couple more of these rough three and out series and he starts off, you know, 2 of 7 or 2 of 8, something like that, like it's going to be a lot happening. Anticipation is going to build and he may force a throw and try to force a play. Like we don't need that to happen, right? He calms down. He starts like 3 of 7, and then he only thinks like 7 of 11, you know, 80 some yards, couple of touchdown passes. Like he's a lot better in the second stretch. I thought he finishes ultimately, before I get to my thoughts overall, he finishes 14 of 23, 138, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. I believe he's only sacked one time. I thought he did everything he could do to manage that game. Good job, right? Clearly, Kevin Stefanski put him in a couple of spots where it was rough. He went 4th and 1, empty set. First read was closed off. Sack. I mean, the pressure came so fast, couldn't get to a second read. You know, I thought that could have been helped out coaching wise. It was definitely felt like a challenge to me to see what he could do. I do think he managed the game very well. He took checkdowns when they were available. He scrambled for a first down. He had his typical swagger. He has a new first down celebration when he checked the time on his watch. And then he threw up the watch when he got in the end zone. I thought that was great. I thought he, like I said, commanded the huddle. The operation was smooth. They didn't have false starts. They didn't have delay of games. They didn't have holding penalties for him scrambling around trying to make a play. He only did the scramble around one time. He got out of it, and then he jogged out of bounds. So instead of throwing out of bounds, he jogged out. I probably threw it out, but he jogged out of bounds. It's basically the same thing. It was like a 1 yard loss. I thought that the team looked organized. He made a couple. Both touchdown throws were high level throws. One, he was rolling to his left, fitted between the man who was on, which was a safety, and the corner, trying to close the gap, fitted right in between corner of the end zone, touchdown. And then another one, he had pressure in his face, throws a 20-ish yard dig, low hold it, receiver slides in, again, touchdown. One thing I want to give him credit for, and this is a skill I don't think it's talked about much, but the greats had it. Look at your Tom Brady, look at your Drew Brees, go look at Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning, go look at Josh Allen, Jared Goff, Lamar Jackson, Burrow is really good at this as well. Those elite level guys. Jaden Daniels showed that he could do it a little bit too. I mean, he missed a couple of opportunities. But when a team gives you a turnover, what is your touchdown percentage on the back of it? Shedeur Sanders received a muff punt in the red zone, and he got an interception. Both of those drives led to touchdown drives. Both of those turnovers led to touchdown drives. That's huge, because you go into a game, I'll just tell you from my experience, you go into a game thinking, some people go into the game and think, okay, if everything goes our way, we'll win by a couple touchdowns, right? But, you know, everything going your way, chances are slim, so on and so forth. But you kind of go in with the mindset of, okay, they can really only score about 21 or 24 on us, whatever. You go in a turnover, especially a turnover down the field, kind of gets treated like a punt almost. And for him to go down and score a touchdown, and then he got the short field and scored a touchdown, that's big. That's big from a coaching perspective of when we make the other team make a mistake, we capitalize on that mistake. That's what coaches preach all the time, capitalizing on our opponent's mistakes. Football is going to come down to, football is 70, 80 plays. 5 or 6 are going to decide the game. mistake by somebody, capitalized on by somebody else, that's what's going to decide the game. Most of football is 3-yard run into a cloud of dust or a 4-yard pass. You know what I'm saying? Like, most of it, both sides accomplish the goal. Then there's anywhere from five to 7 or 8 plays where one side screws up and the other side takes advantage of it or doesn't. And that's when the difference in the game arises. And I think that he took very much high level advantage of that, especially when, like I said, 2 turnovers with 2 touchdown drives. That's huge. That's major. Where a quarterback can lead his offense down the field after a turnover, putting points on the board, is humongous for any quarterback. But I thought he looked really, really good. I'm pretty sure he's not going to play next week. Dylan Gabriel, I can almost guarantee he's going to be healthy for next week. Conspiracy theory or not. I think that Gabriel's going to be healthy next week. What he did do, he did 2 things. One, he showed that he should have been a higher draft pick. First overall, maybe not. First round, absolutely. Definitely higher than Tyler Shaw and Jackson Dart. Who Jackson Dart showed himself pretty well. I'm recording this around 5-ish on Saturday. Jackson Dart showed himself pretty well as well. I didn't watch it as intently as I watched the Shador game. I had an appointment. However, from what I did pop in on and even seeing a couple of the highlights, he secured himself very well. He showed himself very well as well. I think Shador is better than he always was, but Dart showed himself well. But obviously, Shador shouldn't have been a 5th-round pick. He should have been higher than Dylan Gabriel. Should have been higher than Tyler Shaw. I agree. I think he should have been higher than Jackson Dart. I think he should have been the number 2 overall pick. I think it should have been Cam Ward than him. It's just a fact of life. However, I'm excited to see what he's able to do in Cleveland. I think, again, he either acquitted himself. He either showed himself to be the guy in Cleveland in the future, or, you know, a team like the Rams. I point to the Rams a lot. There is no succession plan in Los Angeles. Jimmy Garoppolo is not the succession plan. Neither is Stetson Bennett. There needs to be a succession plan in Los Angeles. Matt Stafford is a bad back. Sean McVay and Les Snead calling the Cleveland Browns, said, hey, you're drafting him for a 5th. We'll take him from you for a 3rd. And sticking Shador in L.A. with the opportunity to learn from Matt Stafford, learn from Jimmy G, and then next year it's all the Shador Sanders show. You know, I think that's an opportunity there for sure. I would look at if I'm Deion and I'm Shador's agent, I call the Rams. Hey, what would you think about bringing Shador in? Especially if Cleveland's not going to give him a realistic chance of starting this season. All right, and then I guess we're going to do some quick-ish hitters in the NFL. My New England Patriots look like a completely different organization from the Gerard Mayo year to the Mike Vrabel day. Obviously, congratulations to Tom Brady for getting his statue unveiled in front of the Foxborough faithful. And then the open kickoff of the game happens, and Trayvon Henderson hits the head on the goalpost from 100 yards out. The offensive line looked mean and nasty. Will Campbell had several big pancake blocks. Drake May looked calmed and composed, which is the report we've been getting all week out of joint practices. Even the Will Campbell stuff, he's been reported as incredibly nasty on the blocks, which is, the ultimate compliment for a lineman is to be nasty. And he was incredibly physical on the blocks. Trayvon Henderson looked electric. We had some moments there. Prosperity on the offensive side of the ball. Also had a turnover from Drake May. Trying to do a little bit too much. I hope it's not a trend that we deal with in the future. But all in all, a good day for New England. They just look like a professional football team. They look like they know what the hell they're doing for the first time since the latter years of Belichick. They know what they got going on, and they know what they want to do, which is what Vrabel pretty much said he's going to hang his hat on, is know-how, knowing what he wants to do, how he wants to get it done, so on and so forth. So kudos to the Patriots for just looking better, man. I couldn't take another unserious year, as I called it, where we just looked silly. We looked like we didn't know what we were doing. And then reports come out, Gerard Mayo, teams on the plane back from a loss, and instead of watching film with the coaches, he is in the back playing card with the players. Like, no, it was a bad idea, right? And so I'm glad that Mike Vrabel is in to fix it, to ensure we don't have that problem again. The Indianapolis Colts. Man, it must suck to be a Colts fan. So they go into the game with a plan of kind of equally evaluating kind of equally evaluating both Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson, right? Kind of evaluating both guys. And Anthony Richardson would get starting game one, play for about, I think it's a quarter and a half or two quarters, whatever, a set time. And then the other quarterback would get like a half a quarter, and then they flip the roles in the second game. Well, Anthony Richardson gets P-laid early and dislocates his finger, which means Daniel Jones comes in this game. Now, could they easily just flip it? Would Anthony Richardson get the start in this game? Sure. But Daniel Jones ended up getting kind of a wide array of snaps that he wasn't supposed to get. And I think further complicates the Colts quarterback plan, because if you're going to stick with your plan, then Daniel Jones is going to get considerably more preseason in-game snaps than Anthony Richardson, unless you're going to play on both in game three. And if you decide to flip it to where, okay, Daniel ended up getting most of that game, and so I guess we'll go with Anthony, you know, he dislocated his pinky on his throwing finger. How healthy is he going to be to even properly show you his competitive level against Daniel Jones? I mean, it is complicated in Indianapolis right now. So I am definitely rooting for them to figure that quarterback situation out. I think Daniel Jones is the guy. I really do. I've seen enough of Anthony Richardson. I mean, I don't love Daniel Jones, but come on now, it's Anthony Richardson. I think Daniel Jones is considerably better than Anthony Richardson, and I do think that wholeheartedly. And then last team we're going to really discuss here is the Cincinnati Bengals. They are the Bengals. They are the Bungles once again. Offense, Zach Taylor, he went out with the strategy of, we're going to play the starters. I'm tired of the slow starts. We're going to play the starters. I'm tired of us starting 0-1, 0-2, 0-3, and having to dig our way out of it. So they played their starters in their preseason game. And then they played a team in the Philadelphia Eagles who played no starters. No Jalen Hurts, no Saquon Barkley, no anything. And Joe Burrow, because Joe Burrow, 9 of 10, 123, 2 touchdowns, never sacked, 157.5 rating out of 158.3. Jamar Chase, 4 catches, 77 yards and a touchdown. Doing him, right? And the defense was just awful. Like, Tanner McKee, who is no one starting quarterback, I think, absolutely ripped them to shreds. Like, the defense was terrible. I think it was missing Shamar Stewart. I don't think Shamar Stewart was playing yet. And, of course, it's missing Trey Hendrickson. But, my God, like, you have to have the ability to create some pressure. I mean, they were absolutely... I mean, Tanner McKee was just sitting back there. He got tush pushed at one point. I mean, like, he was looking like Jalen Hurts out there. And that was all Eagles backups. The Cincinnati Bungles could not have bungled their defense any more than they already did, because it is an absolute nightmare of a unit. And that was the Eagles backups. Cincinnati is... Like I said, they got issues, and they're mainly defensive. They just saw the Shamar Stewart contract. Now moving on to our contract portion, the Trey Hendrickson thing is still floating out there. I'm sure he had got a ball out of seeing that unit get kicked around like that. Probably thinking he could help them, which, I mean, he led the league in sacks last year, so I'm sure, or the year prior, one of the two, but I'm sure he could most definitely help them. I mean, it was a disaster of a defense. Defensive performance. Micah Parsons and Jerry Jones continues to be in a standoff, with Jerry Jones stating that he bought the Cowboys on a handshake deal. You iron out the details later. He's saying that him and Micah shook hands in March about the general framework of a deal. They just hadn't got the all the intricacies and the words and the bonus structure, whatever, locked in. But the salary range was set. I mean, Jerry thinking like in the business world. I say, I'm going to buy this company for $300 to $400 million. You shake my hand and say, all right, cool. We just got to iron out what end of the range we're on, when's money's due, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the general framework of the contract is done. And that's when Jerry, you know, thought he shook hands with Micah on something very similar. Micah says, well, no, I can't do that. My agent can do that, though. And so that's where we're at. And both sides are digging in. Micah's holding in. Jerry is not budging. Micah did give up his leverage, however. So a few years ago, Chris Jones famously sat in a skybox with his agent when the Chiefs lost their week one game. The Chiefs had to come back to the negotiating table and kind of pretty much giving Chris whatever he wanted. And then Chris came back. Well, that is allowed to happen if you never report to camp. So if you eat the 50 grand a day and you eat the game checks up to, I think, week eight, you can rejoin the team. And then, but you know, you rejoin the team, no harm, no foul, basically, besides the financial stuff. And your contract, you know, doesn't toll and you'll be ready to go. If you ever show up and then decide to leave, it's basically like going AWOL in the military. Like, it is, like, it's serious if you ever decide to do that. I can't think of another reference right now, but it's like walking out on your, it's like no call, no show in your job. Like, it is high level, screw up. You got a CBI. I mean, there is. I mean, they can void your contract. Like, they can do all kind of stuff to you if you show up to, if you ever show up and then leave. They have the right to do a lot of stuff per our CBA. And then Scary Terry, not much has changed there. There was a small update where they were saying that it's not the money, it's the structure and the details and stuff like that of like a DK Metcalf contract that Terry McLaurin is after, not necessarily the raw dollar amount. But up next, we're going to talk about the WNBA, what's going down in the W. Welcome back into the show, and now we're gonna move on to the W. As we got a couple of games tonight, we have the CBS game, actually Sky and Fever. Kind of a disappointing game, as Angel Reese not played in several games with a back injury. Many people, myself included, think she's shutting it down for Unrivaled in a couple of months. I would not openly accuse her of quitting on the team. However, the season's lost in Chicago, right? And so certain moves to get draft position, there's no lottery in the W. It's a straight draft. So right now, Connecticut has the number one overall pick. And then there's Dallas, and then there's Chicago. They're fighting for number one because there's a five-game gap to Washington and so on and so forth. So they are fighting for number one. Number one overall pick in Chicago could be a flaw. Well, no, it won't be. I would say a Flaugie Johnson, Angel Reese reunion, but no, that's not gonna happen for a bevy of reasons. They don't like each other. So they do have a lottery. But it would help you. It would help you for sure. Lauren Betts does not need to be a Chicago Sky, right? She's great, but their strength is their big. AZ Fudd, I can almost guarantee, is going to find her way into Dallas. Olivia Miles would be interesting in Chicago. Tania Lawson, like I said, Flaugie Johnson. Chloe Kitson would help you either. So I think they're going to be looking at a Flaugie Johnson. They got to mend the fence with Angel. Or Tania Latson. She's an absolute bucket. I think that is who they'll look at. Either Olivia Miles, who kind of runs that point, kind of a do-it-all guard. Or they go with Tania Latson, who is an absolute bucket. She puts the ball in the hole. Not the world's best three-point shooter. But as far as just raw scoring, I mean, she puts the ball in the hole. She's going to go to South Carolina this year. So she puts the ball in the hole. She led D1 in scoring last year. She's a flat-out scorer. But regardless, but I want to talk about I don't want to talk about Scott. I mean, I'm a Scott fan because Angel Reese. I also love the Aces, AJ Wilson, and so we'll talk about them. But I want to discuss the Indiana Fever. This is the Indiana Fever falling apart. So it's been a very, very strange Caitlin Clark season. She had a groin injury or something that was bothering her, groin injury before the All-Star break. She came back and went out with it again. And then she missed the All-Star game and hasn't played since All-Star weekend with this groin injury. And then yesterday, a couple days ago, within the past couple days, in the same game, they lose Sidney Colson to a torn ACL and Ari McDonald to a broken right foot, both are for the season. So the Indiana Fever have lost three of their top four guards for a considerable amount of time. Like I said, Caitlin Clark's having an incredibly strange season. She was never injured at Iowa. Like, she played every game at Iowa. She was never injured. There was no injury history of her in college, in high school. And then you get to the W, she wasn't injured her rookie year. And then now, she has, like I said, this growing thing. She cannot play on it. Whatever it is, she is not able to push through it. And it's, of course, it's affecting the team. I mean, they are used to being Caitlin-centric. And she is not there. And now, when they'll be even more Caitlin-centric, Sidney Colson, Ari McDonald has been two of the people, along with Kelsey Mitchell, that's been really kind of closing that gap. And now Sid and Ari are gone. I mean, so absolutely brutal what's happening in Indiana right now, injury-wise. Hopefully, Caitlin can come back soon. They're going to need to get very Caitlin, Kelsey, and Aaliyah Boston-centric to have any shot to do any damage in the playoffs. But they're going to need Caitlin to come back soon in order for that to happen. Asia Wilson. She just scored 29 points on her 29th birthday. Why do I bring Asia Wilson up? So, the Minnesota Lynx star, Moo Mini, considered the best player in the world, Nafisa Collier, have been surviving without her. They've won four straight games, 8-2 over their last two. They have been surviving relatively without her. In juxtaposition to that, someone who's been gaining ground in the standings, actually tied currently with Indiana for fifth, is the Las Vegas Aces, led by Asia Wilson, who have turned a corner. They are 7-3 in their last 10. Asia Wilson's playing a lot more dominant basketball. Jackie Young is picking it up. They're still not getting a ton out of Jewel Lloyd right now. They've benched her. I mean, they have just made it where she's just not relevant on the team right now. Chelsea Gray is the point guard herself. She's absolutely balling, but I'm just looking at Jewel Lloyd. She's still getting 28 minutes a night, but she's 11 points a game right now. But I'm looking at Asia Wilson. She's 30 minutes a night, 21.8 points per game, leads the team. 9.2 rebounds a game, leads the team. 1.6 steals a game, leads the team. 2.2 blocks a game, leads the team. And she's not even fouling the most. That's currently Jackie Young, Melissa Smith is the current foul champion. And then when it comes down to assists, she is third on the team in assists. I mean, so she is one-womaning the Las Vegas Aces back into playoffs. I mean, they're in the playoffs, right? Back and trying to get that first-round host. She's absolutely playing out of her mind right now. But credit to her teammates, Jackie Young, Chelsea Gray, Jewel Lloyd is still playing solid basketball. And Alyssa Smith is beyond being that down-low bully that they were looking for. So credit to her teammates, but I think Asia Wilson right now is playing her way into another MVP award. I came into this year, a lot of Nafisa Collier being the best player on the planet. I kind of conceded it a few weeks ago. I gave in. I said, okay, all right. Like, she's the best woman on the planet. Like, all right, it is what it is, right? And then when the fee went out and her team has been kind of playing well without her, and I'm just looking at what Asia Wilson is doing every night, just watching her play the way she is playing. She is the best player on the planet. Like, and it's to me, it's a big three and everyone else. It's Breanna Stewart, it's Nafisa Collier, and it's Asia Wilson. And then there's everybody else. There's a gap. Like, Candace Parker got in a lot of controversial trouble for her tiers. Her S tier is 10,000% accurate. It's the big three and everybody else. It's Fee, it's Asia, and it's Stewie, and it's everyone else. And so absolutely, kudos to Asia for just saying, no, we're going to get the top four seed. I'm going to be in the MVP race. You just gave the crown of best player away, and I don't think I did anything to lose it. And so absolutely spectacular season by her so far. I mean, what she's doing with the Las Vegas Aces is just tremendous. I mean, you don't understand. I mean, at one point, people were trying to trade Jewel Lloyd again. Like, she had lost her value. I mean, that is how far Jewel had come down. I mean, Jewel was a 20-something point game scorer at night. She's down to 11. Obviously, when you play with a really good team, you're not going to get as many shots, right? But what Asia is doing is flat out spectacular right now. I'm just looking at, I mean, she's playing a few less minutes than what she played last year. Some of her numbers are a little down. She's a little less efficient than she was last year. But she is absolutely balling right now. I think she, again, I hold on to the fact she's the best player on the planet. Other people may disagree with me. Again, if you tell me, it's one of those situations where in the NBA, and I hate putting men in women basketball conversations, but in the NBA, if you tell me your GOAT is either LeBron, Michael Jordan, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I may disagree with you, but I won't argue. They're all very valid GOATs. And currently in the women's game, if you tell me the best player on the planet is Asia Wilson, Breanna Stewart, or Nafisa Collier, I'm not going to argue you. I may disagree, but I'm not going to argue the point because those are easily the three best players in women's basketball currently. Asia Wilson's balling out of her mind. And the close on the WNBA, shout out to Alyssa Thomas, the most versatile WNBA player of all time, becoming the first player to ever go back-to-back-to-back triple-doubles in a game. So she's a triple-double queen by far. But she's the first player ever to have a triple-double in three consecutive games. Congratulations to her. And she kind of does workman triple-doubles. You know, they're not really, 30, 10, and 10s. They're more of 11, 10, and 10s. Or they're, 10, 12, and 11s. But to triple-double, triple-double. And she's the first woman ever to get three in a row. But now we are shifting into our best for last, which is going to be talking about college football. Welcome back into the show. And welcome to Best for Last, which is going to be a quick round the country of college football. Now, there's a lot of weight, in my opinion, on this college football season. A lot of it. There's a lot of programs. This has to be the year for a lot of guys, for a lot of people in college football right now. Arch Manning arrives at the University of Texas. For 2 years, we've heard a lot about Arch Manning, right? A ton about Arch Manning. I mean, he was given a Heisman Trophy and a national championship game on signing day. I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we've heard a lot about Arch Manning and what he's gonna do, even to the point like people were conspiracy theorizing that like teams were tanking for the right to get him in next year's draft, which his grandfather Archie has already stated that he's not coming out next year. Like, he's not coming out this year. He will be at Texas in 2026. And to which I saw a tweet, somebody on Twitter stated that, oh, we're gonna suck. It was Saints fan. We're gonna suck next year too, buddy. We can do this all day. Like, people are like, all right, cool. We'll just suck for 2 years. Not a problem. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and they've already, Archie has already said that Arch will be at Texas in next year. I tend to believe him. I have no reason not to. Everything about Arch's career, especially in college, from him refusing to be in the NCAA game until he was given more money, and him not being a legacy at Tennessee or Ole Miss, but forming his own path at Texas, so on and so forth. Like, everything about his collegiate career has been meticulously planned out. I mean, they didn't fight for money from the EA, they fought for ratings. His ratings was low, was the rumor. And then they said, we're not going to be in the game. And then they came out and, like, you know, fought to get Arch in the game and, you know, up. I mean, they did his own special promo shoot. And then they, his ratings were upped and all kind of stuff. Like, you know, like, it was a thing. They've been very meticulous. Well, he arrives. All the meticulousness is gone. He had a couple of spot moments in games when Ewers was hurt. What's his name? Steve Spurrier had a hilarious quote saying, if Archie was that good, why didn't he start over a seventh round pick in Quinn Ewers? To which I say, touche. Like, you know what I'm saying? If he was clearly the guy, if he was a runaway Heisman candidate and is going to win national championship, why not do that his sophomore year instead of his junior? Like, why not? Why repay? Why re-up Quinn Ewers' money and deal and up his pay if the guy behind him was that much better? To which I say, touche. Right? Like, fair. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if he's the guy, why wait? Why not? You know what I'm saying? Why not just go for it? If it's him, if it's undoubtedly him, why not just go for it? Which makes all the sense in the world. And so, you know, he arrives now. LSU, I'm a huge LSU fan. There's a lot riding on Brian Kelly this season. This is the best roster, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. This is the best roster on LSU's campus since 2007. Yes, I know everybody's going to go, what about 2019? Great. Spectacular. Offensively, yes. Derek Stingley, sure. Like, but as far as that second unit, because remember, we've seen the second unit the following years. The reason why Ed Orgeron got fired, outside of organizational dysfunction, the roster behind them weren't that great. This roster has great twos and threes. Like, this roster is loaded. Patrick Payton, like, is trying to figure out how to play in the SEC. And he was a starter on the national championship level Florida State team. Like, so it's just the depth. Several teams' number one receivers are on LSU now. Of course, you got Garrett Nussmeier. You've got three number one backs. I mean, the offensive line needs a reshuffling, sure. But as far as just talent, for like, this team is loaded. Brian Kelly fails with this roster. And by fail, I mean he's not a playoff team. If he's not a playoff team with this roster, you're looking at somebody else coming in. And the rumor is Nick Saban. Like, there's a lot of pressure on LSU right now. I think they get it done. I think they win the national championship this year. But there's a lot of pressure in Baton Rouge right now on Brian Kelly, especially if the legend of Saban truly is existing again. And he's mentioned coaching football several times, unprompted. If the rumor is true and Saban is right around the corner, lurking in the shadows, that he may have another 4 or 5 years. If he comes back, he doesn't have long. It's not a 10-year thing. It's like Belichick with North Carolina. I think Belichick in North Carolina is 4 to 5 years, max. I think if Saban comes back, let's say Brian Kelly goes 9-3, 10-3, whatever, and we're a Peach Bowl team, I think Brian Kelly gets fired, especially if Nick Saban expresses genuine interest. And all of a sudden, the legend of Saban is on your heels. Well, that's a problem, right? So you're gonna get fired if Nick Saban's available, right? You can't have that if you're Brian Kelly. Georgia is not used to not being in that final weekend. Especially lately in the Kirby Smart era. Gunnar Stockton is the quarterback now. That's a lot of NFL high-level talent to follow. Everything with NFL first-round, second-round pick besides quarterback. Those couple teams were loaded in Athens. There was a lot of pressure there. Not necessarily on Kirby Smart as far as job security, but like you set a standard, right? So now you have to meet that standard. Oregon. Oregon is now in the pressure cooker because they've got talent now. And Dan Lanning's done a lot of chit-chat and a lot of, you know, he came at Colorado. He came at several schools. Of course, they put it out. I mean, so, like, if you're going to be big, bad bully on the block, you've got to be big, bad bully on the block at all times, right? If you're going to be the man, if you're going to talk the noise, if you're going to do all that other stuff, you got to be big, bad bully on the block at all times. And now it's Oregon's turn to be that guy. The Big Ten's got talent. The Big Ten's loaded. And I'm going to speak about another team in the Big Ten shortly. Actually, go to the Big Ten situation. Penn State. This got to be Penn State's year. This is the best Penn State team they've ever had in Happy Valley under James Franklin. This has to be James Franklin's time to win the big one at Penn State. He's got to win it this year. He's got his team. He's got his program. He's got the backing. He's got the support. He's got the quarterback. He's got the roster. This has to be his year at Penn State because they share a conference with the defending national champion in Ohio State, who lose a quarterback. That's it. Jeremiah Smith is back. Caleb Downs is back. Most of that team returns from last season. Emeka Buka's gone, sure, but most of that team returns from last season. Yeah, Ohio State is right there with anybody in the country. The Big Ten has three title contenders in it, and Clemson. Dabo, dude, and you're right there, right? And you got Cade Klubnik. You've got your roster. You don't believe in the portal. You got a portal kid now. Like, you don't believe in the portal. You believe in building through your freshman, where your team is up there now, right? You're in the ACC. There's no threats. None. There's not a singular threat should be you in the AC. North Carolina might give you some problems, but there shouldn't be really any real threats to you in the ACC, not this year at least. This is your chance to roll through the ACC, get that playoff spot, and get in the playoff with Clemson with Cade Klubnik and Dabo Swinney, because Kalen DeBoer, his leash ain't that long in Tuscaloosa. And of course, Dabo Swinney has the infamous, or famous, depending on who you ask, Bama clause in his contract, where his buyout plummets if it's Alabama. And so Kalen DeBoer slips up again this year, and the recruiting class ain't that great, and he loses the fan base there. If LSU does what they're supposed to do, and Auburn's reportedly really good, and of course Texas should be a national contender, and Texas A&M has a roster, and Georgia should be back, and if Alabama's the 5th, 6th team in the SEC, it's gonna be a phone call made to Clemson, South Carolina, to Dabo Swinney, to see if he wants to come turn around the Alabama program. Now, they're gonna tell him you gotta be able to use the portal, because we're losing kids to the portal, not keeping them. You know what I'm saying? We're not getting them back, that sort of thing. But that's going to be interesting. So you see, there's a lot of weight this college football season on a lot of different programs. We didn't even mention Iowa not having a passing game. We didn't mention Mario Cristobal in Miami post-Cam War. We didn't mention Lincoln Riley at USC. We didn't mention the new regime at UCLA. We didn't mention Coach Brown at Syracuse having his best roster there. We didn't mention Coach Prime, bless that he recovered from bladder cancer, but we didn't mention Coach Prime in the post-Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders era. You know what I'm saying? We didn't mention a lot of guys who also are carrying pressure on them as well. We didn't mention Matt Rule. Now it's another year of Dylan Raiola at Nebraska. So there's a lot happening around the country we didn't even get to. And it tells you how much pressure is going on around the country. It's a huge year in college football. Could not be more excited. Straight seeding in the playoff, which is going to be, thank God. The teams are still in how they were in, but straight seeding. Like, Boise State ended up with a bye last year. And it's like, what the hell? Like, you know what I'm saying? So, straight seeding in the playoff. So, once the 12 teams are decided, it's straight seeding. However you finish is how you get seeded. I'm good with that because I want the conference to still mean something. As far as, you know, top four conference champions plus the biggest group of five or the highest ranked group of five champion, and then 7 at largest. Once those 7 teams are decided, then you straight seed them from those 12. That's how the seeds get decided. So I'm okay with that, right? Like, I'm good with that. But ultimately, I cannot wait for the college football season. It is 3 weeks. I'm recording this on August 9th. It's an instant release show. I love those. So it's 3 weeks away from LSU at Clemson. So two of the teams I mentioned are going to play each other week one. We're going to get some answers week one. Texas, who I mentioned, and Ohio State, who I mentioned, are going to play each other week one. So we're going to get some answers in 3 weeks on 4 of these teams. I cannot wait. I'm over the moon for it, actually. But this has been a great show. Great show. So happy to have been back in the recording chair, back on the microphone talking to you guys. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. Again, it's an instant release show, so I'm about to quick add some stuff, and then it will be out to you guys for your consumption. But this is your owner and host, Justin Jackson, signing out.